right, glad you're with us. And write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. We got a great show on TV tonight and a great show, obviously, here today. Happy Friday. You know what we decided to do with all of the, now that we know Mueller had to correct his 9.5-minute debacle from the other day and say, oops, I said just the opposite forever. Now I didn't know what I was saying. You know, I wonder if he was reading somebody else's speech. I wonder if he even read it ahead of time. Because he was kind of stumbling over it. Didn't seem to be familiar with the material. Anyway, John Solomon and Greg Jarrett and Joe DiGenova, Victoria Tunsing and, you know, Matt Slapp and Tom Fitton. And everybody's going to be in a studio audience tonight for the hour, which I think is going to be fun. And we're looking forward to that. There's only been a small group of us that have been willing to dig in day after day after day to find out the real, true, and accurate story about what has gone on in this country. And everything that we've been reporting is true. And I don't want to keep anybody out of it. You know, like every time I read a list, I forget 10 names and then people get annoyed with me. And you know, we had talk radio, Rush, Mark, others, Laura, Tucker. You know, there's only so many of us. And Judge Jeanine has been out there and so many others. We're not obviously going to have everybody there, but as many as could make it that were invited that had any part to play in it, we're going to have in here. But I will tell you, the fact that we got so close to a point where 99.9% of the media mob, just the breathlessness, the hysteria, the insanity, the anonymous sources, the glee that we've got them, we've got them, we've got them. And it went on for well over 2 years. And we saw the same scenario unfold this week. Robert Mueller goes out. What I figured out about Mueller is Mueller was doing one thing. He was sending a loud message apparently received by the likes of Jerry Nadler. Whatever you do, don't force me to testify. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just telling you right now, I'm not going to say anything. Anything I have to say is in the report. And so he tries to go out there and basically hang a cloud over President Trump, and he thinks he's being skillful in what he is doing here, and it ends up just backfiring and blowing up in his face because either somebody else wrote it or he didn't remember what he had said in the past. Now, we've had many people, Rudy Giuliani was on Hannity last night, says it's like the Wizard of Oz, the guy behind the curtain with no power. And, you know, the grand wizard, but what did he really know and when did he know it? And the fact that we had so many people in this country willing to say not exonerated, that is not a standard of any constitutional republic justice that we as Americans, we should not be having a debate over. The idea, the principles of the presumption of innocence, the due process under the law, not guilt by accusation, not guilt by anonymous sourcing, not guilt by the mantra of a media mob that just really end up quoting each other in a big loop and all of them turning out to be not only wrong, but purposefully wrong because they have an agenda. And in the process, destroying what was left of their minimal reputations. I mean, you think about this. Robert Mueller, you know, well, not exonerated. That was the big takeaway. But the problem is he goes into this 9.5-minute explanation about, well, we didn't have the ability to, in fact, indict a sitting president because of longstanding Department of Justice policy. Now, the problem is that was told to the Attorney General Barr, the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. I think there are about five individuals by name that heard Robert Mueller say again and again that this Department of Justice policy as to the question constitutionally if you can or cannot indict a sitting president was never a factor in his decision, that he was never going to make a ruling or determination on that. And then you've got to go back to, well, we used to have the independent counsel statute. That's when Clinton got impeached. 11 specific felony charges listed against then President Clinton. He was impeached. He did lose his law license, and he did pay a settlement of nearly $1 million to Paula Jones. So the fact that hours after the press conference, now you get the same reaction for the hours in the intervening hours immediately after Robert Mueller makes his statements, everybody's back on TV with new life. The life is, oh man, well, I think we really were right. No, you weren't. And, you know, then we go right to impeachment.
We seem to be moving toward a place where impeachment may be inevitable. The dam really seems to be breaking wide open.
This obstruction point is also impossible to look away from, because I think what he was really saying is Congress has a job to do.
They now have the green light, if they want it, from Mueller's statement that it's the ball is in their court, and now they've got to pick it up and run with it and do the right thing.
The Democratic-controlled Congress will have no choice but to open an impeachment inquiry into President Trump.
Every single day that the president sits in that office, he's obstructing justice, right?
Because if he spoke in plain language, what he would have said today was, anyone who read my report and said no collusion, no obstruction, total exoneration is a big fat liar. That's what he would have said in English. No lawyer.
If he had my potty mouth or yours.
The unrestrained.
And in this case, she knows that she gets one shot at this. If she blows it and they don't get him impeached in the House, they won't get him in the Senate, which is also a huge factor here. If they don't do the thing correctly in the House, they never get to go after him again on any of this.
So the train whistle's blowing, and Pelosi's got to make a decision. And I think that's the tough question for her. It's always been, are you willing to say no to impeachment? And I think it's totally up in the air what she's going to do.
Well, that was great for a few hours until finally, people got to Robert Mueller and said, Mr. Mueller, you said on multiple occasions that was not a factor. So what did they do? They had to scramble. And then the special counsel's office, frankly, I think with a little lift and help and maybe cover even in a professional manner from the attorney general Barr, deciding to join in the statement with the special counsel. So we had the Department of Justice and the special counsel's offices jointly releasing a statement, clarifying, in other words, fixing the mess that Mueller made earlier in the day at his press conference. And that statement was very clear. And it was written and released by Kerry Kupek, who is a spokeswoman for the DOJ. Peter Carr is the spokesman for the special counsel's office. Remember, when there was the report earlier in the week, who made the report? This idiot Michael Wolff, who's just a known liar, there was an indictment that had been drawn up on obstruction charges for Donald Trump. Well, the only other time the special counsel's office ever commented on something being fake news was the whole BuzzFeed fiasco. But for them to step out and say, no, we never drew up any indictment was a big deal. So then finally they released the statement. The media had already taken the bait. They were out. They were swimming out, dragging the line, you know, as far as they possibly could, right back to their psychosis and rage and this fantasy of impeachment that they have. And then it comes out. The attorney general had previously stated that the special counsel repeatedly affirmed that he was not saying that but for the Office of Legal Counsel opinion. In other words, Department of Justice policies as to the constitutional question of whether you can or cannot indict a sitting president. He would have found, in other words, he is not saying that opinion, that he otherwise would have found the president guilty of obstruction of justice. He said just the opposite. It played no part in the decision making. The special counsel's report and his statement totally made clear today that the office concluded they would not reach any determination one way or the other about whether or not the president committed a crime. There are no conflict in these statements. That was what I think the bone that was thrown to Mueller by the attorney general, because clearly Mueller I honestly believe he did not read what he was beforehand, the statement that he read, because he knows he would otherwise have been lying, and that he had numerous witnesses on the record that would have said no. He said just the opposite again and again and again and again and again. And, you know, this whole idea, I mean, you know, Barr is so smart on the law. You just watch how his brain works, so understanding of policy, and, you know, had to refute Mueller's claim during his take no questions, I never want to talk again for the rest of my life until I die press conference, that he could not recommend the president be charged. No, that's not true either. And I can assure you the guy that appointed Team Weissman, read License to Lie, Sidney Powell, he withheld in the past exculpatory evidence. And then, of course, he lost tens of thousands of American jobs in the Enron accounting case. And then he lost in the Supreme Court. How hard is it to lose 9-0 in the Supreme Court? Pretty hard. And he puts four Merrill executives in jail. But that was also overturned in the Fifth Circuit. Why would he appoint him? Guy that was at Hillary Clinton's victory party. Wasn't a victory party. It was a funeral. Funeral for a candidate is what you'd call it.
This is not okay.
No, it's not. And why would you appoint Clinton's own attorney? And how do you only appoint Obama donors, Clinton donors, etc.? Why you can't find a single Republican conservative? How about a libertarian to be a part of this witch hunt that he put together? I think, you know, last night kind of scared me when Rudy Giuliani said, in all the time he was representing the president, and I've not asked Jay Sekulow this question, but I will, you know, he only spoke to Mueller once. Who was running this operation? I mean, there's something off here. I have my own thoughts. I'll keep them to myself, but something is really, really off. But it doesn't matter. Hook, line, and sinker, the predictable media mob, the predictable response, the predictable guidance of rage and psychosis takes over, because this is who they now are. These are people that only care about one thing, and that is doing anything, saying anything, advancing any lie, any conspiracy theory. I mean, you know, it's hilarious that the New York Times, you know, is now saying don't go on Maddow's show or Don Lemon's show or CNN or MSNBC because we think they're biased. Because they've gotten sucked in with them for the entire 2 years because they wanted to believe it, too. And they're acting like somehow we're just going to stay away from these partisan shows. By the way, and they mentioned my name, and I'm like, you've never been invited, and I don't want your fake news anyway. And I was right and you were wrong the entire time. So why would I go to your newspaper, which is nothing? By the way, when Donald Trump leaves office, let me tell all you people at fake news, CNN and Conspiracy TV, MSNBC, and New York Times, Washington Post. Let me tell you, it's over. It's done. You better hope for your business and business only that Donald Trump gets reelected. Otherwise, you will dissolve to be a company because that's what you're making your living on, peddling lies and conspiracy theories to gullible people that actually believe the crap you put out. But not this audience. We've been right. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show. So they thought they had their manna from heaven again. They thought the door opened. They thought that they could feast on the last nugget of their conspiracy theory, and it blew up in their face just hours later. And by the way, the attorney general is the one that is right. Robert Mueller could have put anything he wanted in that report. Problem is, there was no collusion. There was no conspiracy. And what Robert Mueller now fears the most is answering questions like, when did you know there wasn't a conspiracy? How did you, can you explain why you hired this abusively biased anti-Trump team to go on this witch hunt? You couldn't find a single Republican? Why, Mr. Mueller, did you have time for FARA by the way, nobody gets charged with a FARA violation. Nobody. Or the Logan Act. I mean, this doesn't happen. Or loan applications and taxi medallions. Now, the mandate was that broad to look into any collusion with the Trump campaign 2016. but you missed the dossier, the dirty Hillary Clinton, bought and paid for, produced by a foreign national, Russian dossier, full of lies, spread to the American people via the media, leaked by people in the former administration, and then used as the basis of a FISA application to spy on the opposition party campaign in the days leading up to an election? You didn't have time to do any of that, Mr. Mueller? Why? Why did you have time for FARA violations, but not a Russian dossier that literally was used to spy on the other campaign? All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Happy Friday. By the way, we had a big celebration for Linda last night when she won the Gracie Allen Award and received it over the weekend, and she's now back. We're very proud of you, and we're very especially happy that you totally got sandbagged and didn't know all your friends would be at a party, and you were surprised, and you like to pride yourself as knowing everything.
You did a good job.
That's right, we did.
Get an A for effort and an A for execution.
Everybody was ordered to shut up. That's
well,
it.
Almost everybody did.
Who didn't?
Sweet Baby had a moment.
Uh-oh, what did he do? No, but he didn't give it away.
No, he didn't give it away, but he definitely had a moment.
Well, the moment was... Well, I thought he gave a beautiful toast last night. That's
what, forget about it.
Forget about it. Yeah.
It was unbelievable. He's all heart.
Well, you know, it's, you know, every once in a while, we don't sit here every day and pat ourselves on the back and say, oh, you're just busy working. You know, we are working. People ask me, you ever think about your success or this? I'm like, no. Who has time? We don't have time, but we got a show to do.
We're not the Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, and we love what we do. We feel blessed to do what we do, and... we want to remain fighting every day. There is a sense of, you know, Neil Bortz once said to me after 9/11, Neil Bortz is my friend and he's retired now, but he was just a legend in talk radio, an amazing talent. And we were once competitors, but we were still friends. And, you know, over the years, you know, he had convinced himself that this is just entertainment. There's nothing but pure entertainment. Meanwhile, he was passionate about the issues he cared about, a libertarian. He really wanted to switch to the consumption tax, the fair tax, and he fought hard for it. How he ever made a tax book, a number one New York Times bestseller, is a miracle in and of itself, but he did. And he was right, and it would be a better system, and I hope one day... The problem is, if we ever adopt that, they'll keep the income tax system and just add it on top of everything else. That's, you know, you always get the spending increase, you'd never get the tax decrease. It's always, on the front end, you get amnesty, but you don't get the wall built, which is what the president is finally saying, I want the money for the wall. I'm fighting for the wall, which he's been able to get. The reappropriation of funds from the Defense Department, he got. They weren't able to override his veto as it relates to the emergency, which, by the way, he has both legislatively and constitutionally as commander-in-chief. He has the authority to do exactly what he's doing. But Congress had in the past passed a law that says that the president has available the means to build barriers if there are drug corridors into the United States. And, yeah, we've cited that law over and over again. But I also would argue constitutionally as commander-in-chief in a 2-year period of 4,000 homicides happened to Americans because of illegal immigrants and 30,000 sexual assaults and 100,000 violent assaults, I think you have not only a role but a duty as the commander-in-chief of the country to step in and say, you know what, I'm going to stop this. This cannot happen to this country. And we've got us, if 90% of heroin crosses that southern border, I'm going to make a decision and we're going to stop it so we can save American lives. And this president is adamant about it. And the only people that have been playing politics on this are the Democrats as they.
And you know what, Sean, can I jump in for 1 second and just give you a little help here on one point that we're making?
Yeah.
Is, you know, there's a lot of kids that are being recirculated and used to get across the border.
Yep.
And the president is actually helping these Central American and Mexican children that are being used as pawns for people to get into this country.
It is
so
sad.
He's actually helping both sides of the border. Well, and kids are innocent victims in all of this.
The problem is that people see the miles of border being built. People understand the commitment the president has. Other people are reading The American Economy, you know, which has come back roaring and somewhat miraculous in the dramatic shift and change from the horror of the Biden-Obama years. And a lot of people are seeing this as their last chance, and they're saying, we better do it now, or we're never going to get there. But yeah, you're right, because we have had people both on radio and TV that have been out in the field. That one guy in particular, I forget his name off the top of my head, but for 15 years, his job was to stop child sex trafficking from Central America to the United States. And remember the story, they've got tapes. These girls were being raped, young teenage girls, 30, 40 times a day. It is unconscionable that we don't take that side of the equation. This is the human rights side of it. And that's why, you know, the selective moral outrage that says, well, I support a wall and I support the border and I support DACA and I support Dreamers when Obama's president, but I won't support it. It's immoral if Donald Trump is president.
Girls as young as 10 and 11 horrible. Are getting pregnancy tests when they come across the border.
Horrible.
10 and 11.
It's horrible. And it's real. And when we interview these people and they say these things, you know, I just don't understand the left. You know, there are certain issues that I can't understand why they don't agree with me. You know, I'd never liked the fact that, you know, Hillary Clinton claimed to be the candidate for women. Well, then how do you justify her silence on countries that her foundation took millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars from? And I brought this up often in the 2016 campaign, that abuse women as a matter of course. Women are told how to dress. Women are told whether they can leave the house. They must be with a male relative. They can't drive a car sometimes. Marital rape is not a crime, which is insanity. And all sorts of other, you know, Fred Flintstone draconian laws that treat women like property and abuse women institutionally by law in some of these countries that practice varying forms of Sharia law. And then you look at, okay, well, we're going to take millions of dollars from these countries because, and they'll buy our silence. And I'm like, no, that's not good enough for me. And I would think liberals, feminists agree with me on an issue like that, that women should not be abused this way. Or looking at the border from the human trafficking side of young girls, or the 90% of heroin, or now the fentanyl that is, you know, we're losing 300 kids across the country a week. How many more times do we have to talk about these deaths or interview angel moms and dads, and Democrats won't even meet with them, even when they're outside their door like Nancy Pelosi? You know, you go back to countries that are offering, you know, millions and millions of dollars for silence, and, you know, look at how they treat gays and lesbians. They kill them just for who they are. And on horrific public killings, stonings to death, throwing off buildings. And then, of course, there's such openness, but as long as you pay the right amount of money and you donate to the right people, I guess you buy their silence. But, you know, they persecute Christians and Jews. Try and build a temple or a Christian church in some of these countries. Good luck to you. Because if you are a Christian, if you are Jewish, you're persecuted in many of these countries. And you have no option. So, you know, it's a matter of values. This should be an American value. The American value is keep the drugs out of this country. Keep the human trafficking from happening. Protect our security, because maybe when you watch 1,000 people cross the border, maybe 999 of them are people that just want a better life for them and their kids. But maybe the one, is somebody that comes here that has intentions of, you know, some type of terrorist attack, or someone with a background with the cartels, or with, you know, the gang members that are going to commit acts of violence against innocent Americans. The crime statistics are shocking. They're glaring. The media never talks about them. But this is the reality of what this border battle is about. Now, do I think the president wants to really slap a tariff on Mexico? No, I don't. Do I think the president is a free trader? Absolutely. But if the president wants to negotiate, he's got to be real. It's got to have some teeth, and he's got to act like he means it. And then he's got to, if they push him hard enough, he's got to be willing to step in and just do it, which we've seen him do in the past. And in all these trade deal negotiations, the one thing that the president has going for him is that, okay, if you do this, I'm going to do that. And then he goes forward with the plan, and all of a sudden, oh, things that we never thought were possible before, well, they start happening. And that's what you call leadership. That's what you call somebody that backs up what they say by actions. That's the difference between drawing a red line in the sand like Obama did and then doing nothing. And when people were gassed and Donald Trump is the president, you actually use the gas. Sorry, I dropped something. That's why I'm moving the microphone around. I'm a professional. I can talk and dig at the same time.
I wasn't sure if you were doing your aerobic workout.
My what?
Aerobic no. workout. I was like, what's going on in there?
Oh, we got new offices at Fox, and I have a stand-up desk now over there.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah, pretty cool, right?
And your thought on that is?
I still have been sitting, but I do stand for large portions of the radio show. People probably don't know.
Yeah, but you've always done that.
Well, I'm standing now. I mean...
Yeah, well, a few minutes ago, you were on the floor trying to drag the microphone with you.
I was dragging the microphone.
Which got a little weird.
Well, anyway. So this is like, you know, this is what drives me crazy about the media mob and the Democrats. And I've been using these examples, but they really, it's shining a light on their selective moral outrage. Like, if they really cared about collusion, conspiring, impacting the 2016 presidential election, well, you would think that the people in the media would be absolutely aghast and up in arms that, in fact, there is a DNC email that did show efforts to impact our electoral process and dirt they were digging from Ukraine, and a DNC member is conspiring with them. I don't know anybody in the media that's making a big deal about that, or the fact that if you care about equal justice under the law and equal application of our laws, and if you know that somebody's going to be held accountable for lying to the FBI or Congress, well, then you look at the whole Hillary Clinton case and the whole investigation was rigged from the beginning, and you say, well, that wouldn't happen to me, and it wouldn't. That's the point. We can't have a two-tier justice system, one for liberals, one for Democrats, one for the Clintons, and then one for the rest of us. If they, you know, all this talk yesterday after Barr did his 9.5-minute debacle, which he had to back down on and had to contradict and had to clarify because he had said just the opposite numerous times. But if they cared about obstruction, you can't not look at it. Well, why does Hannity keep bringing up Hillary? Because it's the same time period, except she has an underlying crime and we have all the evidence to prove it. There's the answer. And as it relates to obstruction, well, I don't think the average American, if they had subpoenaed emails, they deleted 33,000 of them. They clean out the hard drive with bleach bit. They bust up the devices in case any emails were on them and rip out the SIM cards, which might have a little bit of information on them. If any of us out in America did these things, we would be in jail. That's obstruction of justice with the intent to destroy the evidence with an underlying crime. They don't care about it at all. They care about Russian interference, but how did they ignore a foreign national, Christopher Steele, funneled money? They cared about medallion money and loan application money and tax money, but hiring a law firm to hide a campaign expense as a legal expense, they hire an op research firm, they hire a foreign national, Christopher Steele, and he puts together what is a document that is full of Russian lies. Before the election, those lies get leaked to, let's see, David Corn and Michael Isikoff and the Washington Post. So the American people are reading about two hookers in the Ritz in Moscow peeing in Donald Trump's bed, which never happened. And then, of course, everybody's warned about the dossier. Christopher Steele has an agenda. He's being paid by Clinton. Clinton paid for the whole thing. They can't verify it because it's unverifiable. Even Steele, when push came to shove, under oath, said, I have no idea if any of this is true. But yet James Comey signs the first FISA application, and at the top of the application, it says verified. Wow. That would seem to me that that might be of interest to all of those people on the left that care about collusion with Russia, the 2016 election. No, they don't cover that. It's only Donald Trump. You know, the walls are moral, except Donald Trump wants to build it. You know, sexual assault has got to stop. I believe every allegation against Judge Kavanaugh in high school. But I don't say a word. No, I believers when it relates to the lieutenant governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. You know, it's like, at what point do you not see they reek of politics, hypocrisy, that it's not the issues that they care about? It is all a big lie. It is a fraud. And for a few hours yesterday, they thought they had back what they had lost, and they haven't. Trust me, Mueller's dead in terms of the report. It's over. The whole Mueller issue is done. But now Hillary and having an investigation rigged, trying to rig an election, FISA abuse, premeditated FISA fraud abuse, and much more. And then trying to destroy a duly elected president. That's act two.
He said that he couldn't exonerate the president. You looked at that evidence, and you did. I mean, what's the fundamental difference between your view and his?
Well, I think Bob said that he was not going to engage in the analysis. He was not going to make a determination one way or the other. We analyzed the law and the facts, and a group of us spent a lot of time doing that and determined that both as a matter of law, many of the instances would not amount to obstruction.
As a matter of law.
As a matter of law. In other words, we didn't agree with the legal analysis, a lot of the legal analysis in the report. It did not reflect the views of the department. It was the views of a particular lawyer or lawyers. So we applied what we thought was the right law.
All right, that was the attorney general on CBS and being very, very clear. The biggest development after the 9.5-minute rant by Robert Mueller, which was basically a pleading to Jerry Nadler and company, please don't call me to testify because he does not want to be questioned. I tell you now, he does not want to be questioned by the likes of Jim Jordan, Devin Nunes, Mark Meadows, and others. When did he know there was no collusion? Why did he hire that abusively biased team? Why, if you had time for taxi medallions and everything else, did you not have time to look at a dirty Russian dossier that actually was used to influence the 2016 election? And also, beyond that, spy on an opposition party candidate. And it looks like it's all Russian disinformation, and they probably knew it. Everybody was warned about it. How do you miss that part of it while you're looking into loan applications and tax filings from decades ago? Anyway, one of the guys who's been all over this from the get-go, John Solomon, is with us. He's got yet even more new information today about what did the Brits know about Steele's credibility before the Mueller probe, because Congress has evidence. And by the way, he is the executive vice president, investigative journalist for The Hill. And he has been working throughout all of this, as many of you know, both on radio and TV. We've had him on often. And that is to break open what is now the second act. The curtain is coming up. Bar is finished. John Solomon, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Sean.
All right. So, you know, now we know because of your reporting, some of the key revelations, that there was a previously undisclosed January 2017 memo underway. And what we find is the British National Security Advisor sent Trump advisor Michael Flynn a memo in January of 2017. We now know that Congress has identified multiple witnesses who have saw or handled that memo, including a whistleblower. And Robert Mueller's team questioned witnesses about the warning, and Flynn doesn't recall seeing the memo, but from what I hear, that memo exists.
Well, that is the grand question right now. There is a scramble in Washington to try to locate this memo. It occurred during the transition period, so it's believed it was delivered on January 12, 2017, a very important date, 8 days before the inauguration, the day that the second FISA was approved. and long before the third and fourth FISAs were proven. And if the United States government received the warning, as recalled by Flynn's staffers, that the British had interviewed Steele or had contact with Steele, reviewed his dossier, and did not deem it to be reliable or credible, that would be a significant revelation. And let me remind you about something else. When we're in that period where we have basically two presidents, the sitting president, Barack Obama, on his way out the door, and the president-elect, Donald Trump, about to come in the door, it is not uncommon for a foreign government to communicate the same message to both people. So there's a strong possibility, just under the protocol and predicate of how transitions work, that the same information that the National Security Advisor in Great Britain sent to Mike Flynn may have also been sent to someone like Susan Rice or someone in the White House for the Obamas, which would mean two separate administrations, all of official Washington, should have, did, receive some form of warning about Steele's credibility. Now, the document has not been located. All we know now is that some witnesses remember it and have described it to both Mueller's investigation and now multiple congressional committees, and now the search is on to find this document in the archives.
But there's so much more when you really dig down to the bottom of where we got in all of this. Do you agree with me that it was so unbelievable to me that Robert Mueller actually cited something that he said many times was not a factor in his decision making? Which is the Office of Legal Counsel or Justice Department policy or the consideration of whether you can or cannot indict a sitting president. And as a result of his 9.5-minute pre-planned and what seemingly was read statement, it became a debacle because he had said just the opposite. And yet he was able to feed this, you know, conspiracy mob media mentality and the Democrats' mentality. Oh, now we got the impeachment thing we wanted. And yet there are how many witnesses that heard him say, no, that was not a consideration. We just didn't make a decision. We let the attorney general make the decision as the special counsel statute calls for.
That's right. I think, listen, the fact that there had to be a correction within 6 or 7 hours of this extraordinarily late and unusual statement by Robert Mueller tells you that there was another force at work. And, you know, some people who've looked at that press conference who are linguistic experts have told me it didn't look like Bob Mueller was reading his own words. He seemed to be unfamiliar. He stumbled or tripped over some of the words. It's almost like he was reading somebody else's script. And that's how you might end up with Bob Mueller saying something in a 9-minute press conference that's contrary and antithetical to the evidence of his own private conversations. Whoever wrote that, whether it was Bob Mueller or one of his deputies like Andrew Weissman or someone like that, the statement had to be corrected. That is a warning sign that the messaging was intended to be misleading. You couldn't get something that simple, that wrong. And it's set a new question for us. Are there other things in the Mueller report that could be just as wrong or inaccurate? Are there assumptions that are not based in fact? And I'm beginning to hear from defense attorneys, I'm beginning to hear from intelligence professionals, that there are things in the Mueller report that don't jibe with the public evidence that they are aware of or the private evidence that they have access to. I think that is going to become a dynamic in the next couple of months. If Bob Mueller got major things wrong in this report, you have to ask, what did we just spend 2 years doing? And why would it be written? Why would it be written to evade or go around or stumble over facts that are contrary to it? And why were so many things, like you pointed out, Sean, why don't we look at the problems with the Steele dossier and the Mueller report? It's like the Steele dossier didn't even exist in the Mueller report. It's mentioned like one or two times. Why was the investigation crafted to go around anything except the things that might damage or harm the president? That's going to become a question that I think will consume Washington in the next 2 to 3 months.
So we all know, those of us that really listen to what the attorney general says, those that know the history of the Independent Counsel Act becoming the Special Counsel Act, the rules, procedures, decision-making, the attorney general has been clear that Mueller had all the resources, time, effort, and, you know, to do what he wanted to do.
That's right.
If he went before Congress, how difficult a time do you think he would have? Because I don't think he wants to face Jordan, Meadows and Nunes and others, Doug Collins, because they're going to tear this apart. And he's not going to have good answers because there are no good answers for him.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Rudy Giuliani said something on your show last night that really stuck in my head because it's consistent with what I've heard from witnesses and defense lawyers who dealt extensively with the special counsel's office. Bob Mueller was not omnipresent in this investigation. He almost always seemed to be missing. In fact, Rudy called him the Wizard of Oz. I've used that in one of my columns previously because I've heard that. There's a real question, is Bob Mueller really even that versant in the actual details of the investigation? He obviously got something wrong in his statement. And if you listen to Bill Barr's interview yesterday, I thought there was a significant statement by Barr that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. Bill Barr said his team of lawyers, the legal experts, believe Mueller's team got the legal analysis of the law wrong.
Well, we just played that. He said the legal analysis of the Mueller report did not reflect the views of the DOJ.
Yep, and it may have only reflected the views of a lawyer. Again, you keep thinking he's singling out somebody or a small group of people. If you get the legal analysis wrong, if you get the statement wrong, and now let's look and see if he even has the facts right in the report, we are all going to look back and question, did we really get our money's worth, or what was this two-year investigation really about? I think that's going to be a really fundamental question. Normally, when special prosecutors' reports are done, they're done and we move on. Bob Mueller opened up a door for us to re-examine his behavior based on this news conference on Wednesday. I think the facts in his report need to be examined more closely, given what we're now seeing in his behavior and what the Attorney General said about his legal analysis. Could there be other flaws, other intentional or unintentional misinformation in that report? I think that's where Washington is going to focus in the next month. Keep an eye on that dynamic.
Not exonerated, John Solomon, is not a standard of justice that is acceptable in this country. You know, it's all the rush to judgment, presumption. There's no presumption of innocence. It's guilt by accusation. But it's just the opposite here, because as we've been, and you've been such a big part of it, as the onion is being unpeeled, we find out abuse of power, corruption, starting with the rigged investigation into Hillary's crimes. And of course, a real crime underlying Espionage Act, real intent, destroy the evidence, what she did with subpoenaed emails, et cetera. Then you got the whole issue of the bought and paid for dossier you mentioned earlier. Well, they were all warned about that. They were warned by Bruce Orr. They were warned. You broke the story about Kathleen Kavalec from the State Department, who warned.
Now we may have the British.
Now we have the British. Now, what if the president, when is he leaving for Great Britain? I think today or tomorrow?
He's on his way, yes.
And what if the president of the United States asks, well, what did you know about Christopher Steele, and what did you know about his work on the dossier, and did anybody in our government outsource what would be illegal in this country, intelligence gathering, on
the Five Eyes?
The Five Eyes, which is all these countries, well, we can't do it in our country, but we'll do it for you and share it with you.
That's right. I think those are the questions that the president will ask. I think if the Brits can confirm that they sent this memo to the president, it will be yet another important piece of information that showed how much did the Obama administration know was wrong with Steele's document, and yet they used it to continue to pursue the president in the absence of any evidence of collusion. Maybe, in the end, to set up a perjury or an obstruction trap for the president. You really have to wonder, why did we keep extending an investigation for which there was no basis of evidence? And I think one of the things, Sean, you said earlier on that really is rung in my head in the last couple of days, as you look back at the conduct of the Mueller report, you have to wonder why, after not finding evidence to substantiate a crime or to justify a prosecution, why they took so much time to write a narrative. Because if you remember my column the day the Mueller report came out.
I'll tell you what, why don't you pick it up on the other side? I got to get this break in here. John Solomon, investigative reporter, executive vice president with The Hill, and he, along with the Our Ensemble Core team, now we don't have room for everybody, but we're doing an audience show covering all of this tonight at 9 on Hannity. In other words, all the people that have helped us break this wide open will be in studio with us. We continue with John Solomon. John, all right, I ask this usually and don't give you enough time. Where is this now going in spite of what the media is saying?
Yeah, well, I think there are four things to watch. First, I want to go back to what we've been talking about. I think there is going to be an effort to re-examine the Mueller report to see if it is an accurate representation of the body of facts that are now out there. And if not, why would Robert Mueller get things wrong in the report, like he got wrong in the legal analysis, according to the Attorney General, and like he got wrong in his news conference, was the same sort of effort that was going on before Mueller, meaning trying to frame the president, try to create the impression of a crime that for which there was no evidence to support. Was that still going on as a dynamic inside the Mueller team based on who he picked to join his team? That's one of the things they're going to be looked at. Two, there's going to be a criminal. There is a criminal investigation now underway in Connecticut under John Durham's guidance. And if there were any criminal acts occurred,
but by the way, he wanted to interview Christopher Steele, and the president's going to Europe as we to England as we talked about. You know, well, they apparently they want Julian Assange over here, and it's going to be interesting to see if the Pentagon Papers case holds in under his circumstances, or whether they're going to be able to prove he. Was part of a group that actually took the information. But if it's not, then even the New York Times is scared to death about, quote, what happens to journalism. But what about Chris Steele? Why don't we get him over here?
That's a wonderful question. I think the first question that prosecutors are going to try to act is based on what we now know about the flaws in the Steele document. Did the FBI and the Justice Department violate the law? Did they engage in a conspiracy to mislead the American public during and after an election? And the FISA court, more specifically, to get these warrants. I think it starts there. Will it end with Christopher Steele? That's a great question. We'll have to see how that plays out. But the reason we now have a grand jury and we have a major hard-hitting prosecutor, somebody believed there might be criminality here, and they're now looking
at it. Do you believe these top deep state actors are going to jail or being indicted?
Yes, I think so. And the IG will also get into administrative stuff. So there's a lot of different areas where accountability can be meted out in the near future.
All right. Thanks, John Solomon, investigative reporter, executive vice president of The Hill. He'll be a part of our ensemble show on Hannity tonight. When we come back, the president slapping tariffs on Mexico. Is it the right thing to do? Well, they better start doing their job. Straight ahead.
On that path for a while. And when we do get to where we're going to be ready. I'm very proud of our chairman. We had a big week last week. We won 3 court cases and 1 decision by the Justice Department to give us documents. We have to be ready. It is our founders, I always like to say this, our founders in the darkest days of the revolution, they said, the times have found us. Well, I think right now the times have found us. We have a defiance of the Constitution of the United States. And so when we go down this path, we have to be ready, and it has to be clear to the American people. And we have to hope that it will be clear to the Republicans in this United States Senate.
So,
you know, what really bugs me about that? Because when you see what they say, oh, I didn't know. I didn't know it was wrong to talk to Russians about this. I didn't know. I said, how do you explain that to kids in the hood? When they're approached by law enforcement and they say, well, I didn't realize that I was supposed to do this or that. Well, you're supposed to know. But these very wealthy people with high-priced lawyers can get away with saying, I didn't know it
was wrong. Right, that's why we need you to get in there and to take care of this and just do something with these guys. These guys.
Let me just, because you mentioned several things.
Yes.
Why I think the president wants us to impeach him.
You think he wants us to impeach him?
Well, he knows it's not a good idea to be impeached, but the silver lining for him is then he believes that he would be exonerated by the United States Senate.
All right, Nancy Pelosi, of course, on her favorite late-night liberal talk show that gets very few viewers. It's so funny when you hear people say, well, Hannity's on cable and Kimmel. Why would Kimmel fight Hannity? Because we have more than 2 times his ratings. But, you know, why mention little details like that? 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program. Joining us now is Congressman Andy Biggs, Arizona, Louie Gohmert of Texas. We're going to talk about the president and saying to Mexico, but which, by the way, had the most draconian laws on immigration leading up to President Trump getting into office, which is they either deported you or they put you in jail and there was no middle ground whatsoever. But before we get to that, let's first ask you, Congressman Louie Gohmert and Congressman Biggs. First of all, Nancy Pelosi, she's not really Speaker, Louie, is she? She's Speaker in name only. It seems like Ocasio-Cortez and company are Speaker.
I would never have believed it, Sean, but it sure looks like you're exactly right. During the State of the Union address, there were more people that looked at AOC to see whether they could clap or not than were looking at the speaker. And it's hard to be a speaker under those conditions when you have folks that are not looking to you for leadership. And then we know that they backed her down on the resolution condemning actual anti-Semitic statements. So, yeah, she's not in charge like I sure thought she'd be.
And, Andy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think you look at it, if two votes went the other way, she wouldn't be speaker. So AOC and company really own her, and she's trying to play it moderately, I think, for the swing districts that are up and at stake. But she is owned by the people that got her elected, and that's AOC and company. And that's why you're seeing this slow. She's kicking and screaming, but she's going the impeachment route. Because they own her.
Well, the problem with this all is we've now had four separate investigations into this Trump-Russia collusion issue. The FBI 9-month investigation, House Intel investigation, bipartisan Senate investigation. Then the Mueller report couldn't be any more clear. And Bob Mueller steps in it big time yesterday, has to send out a corrective note. Oops, everything I said in my press conference was wrong because we never considered the issue of Department of Justice policy as to whether or not to determine or not determine obstruction of justice. And so they've got themselves in a bit of a pickle because the economy is flourishing. The president's keeping his promises. We're stronger abroad. We now have the best job market since 1969, Louis Gohmert, the lowest unemployment for African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans, Asian-Americans, women in the workforce, youth unemployment, and they're not helping at all. So if they have the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, the eighth Russia investigation, we know where it's going to end, nowhere. I got to believe at some point the American people look at this and they're just abusing the president and the power of their office, and they're wasting all of the people's time by not doing anything.
Exactly. And, you know, people have a lot of opinions about Speaker Pelosi. She's not stupid. And you can tell she's going into this impeachment thing really kind of scared because she likes being speaker. She knows what it was to give it up before when they overreached on Obamacare, and she sees impeachment as being an overreach. But she's in between a rock and a hard place. If she doesn't go forward, then they bounce her out as speaker. And you're right. Under Obama, people need to know, under Obama, for the first time in American history, 95% of the income went to the top 1%. And President Trump comes in, and wow, you talk about share the wealth. That was so much better. It is so much better for people across the country than anything Obama did. So, yeah, he's making the economy better. GDP growth is still continuing at multiples of what Obama did. So things are looking better, and Pelosi is concerned. One, for being
let me ask you guys this.
By our own people.
So when you're in the halls of Congress and you're in the chamber, you know, what are your conversations, if they even exist, like with either Nancy Pelosi or Ocasio-Cortez or Congresswoman Omar? I mean, is there any relationship there at all?
No, it's real hard to have a relationship with them, to be frank with you. I don't want to be awful about it, but I mean, they're so far out there. There are other members of the Democratic Conference we can work with on issues that don't make headlines, but I tell you what, this cadre that's in there, they're pretty radical and very hard to even have a conversation with them.
All right, let me go to the border. The president slapping tariffs on Mexico. Already you can see the Mexican government has gotten scared because they're now sending their high-ranking people to Washington to negotiate with the administration. They don't want this. Now, the president has to show he means it or else, you know, it's a paper tiger. There's no point in making a threat. It's like Obama, the red line in the sand. But the problem is Mexico for years had the most draconian laws for people that came from Central America. They'd either put you in jail forever or they would deport you immediately. So now all of a sudden they're letting caravans of thousands of people just walk straight on through their country to the U.S. I don't see any alternative for the president at this point. Louis.
Yeah, he's doing exactly what he needs to. And I've told the president before, you know, I know historically when there's a big tariff war between two countries, usually those two countries don't lose. But he knows the art of the deal, and there is no way I'm voting to take away the leverage he needs to get better deals. And you've reminded me, Sean, some years back I filed a bill that would make our immigration laws mirror those of Mexico. And, of course, people were running for the hills. They didn't want to have immigration laws like here like Mexico has.
Well, you know, if we did that here, I mean, that's what was the funniest thing. I had a fight, Andy Biggs, with then-President Vicente Fox, and he refused to recognize that there were illegal immigrants. I said, of course they're illegal. They break the law. They don't respect our laws, our borders, our sovereignty in this country. And he said, no, they are migrants. I said, no, they're illegal immigrants. And yeah, it ended up being a classic Kennedy showdown. But at this point, I don't know what other options we have. And the danger is, I think what's happened is Central America and people of Mexico have figured out, billions now have been allocated for the wall. We have 120 new miles of wall and literally hundreds of miles being repaired. Our window of opportunity is closing. Andy, you've lived there your whole life.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they view this with a certain sense of urgency, but they also recognize the complacency of Congress. But, Sean, these folks aren't just coming from the Northern Triangle of the Central America. They're coming from, you've got them coming from Congo, from Africa, you've got them coming from China, because the whole world is saying the Congress has done nothing. And I view this as much a threat to the United States Congress as it is to Mexico, because he's given us a couple weeks. We've got to get in there and act. And I wish my colleagues on the other side of the aisle would say, the one thing we can do, we can fix amnesty immediately.
Well, I have a question for both of you. Why is it that in Obama's second term, walls weren't immoral? Protecting our border was not immoral. And they said they wanted DACA. They said they wanted Dreamers. And President Trump offered all of this. But now all of a sudden, because it's his idea, what? Now it's a bad idea?
Well, it's still a good idea for him. He just built a 10-foot wall around his home, talking about Obama. And so that's why I said on the House floor, Mr. Obama, you either tear down your wall or start supporting the wall at the border. But let me also say, Sean, any Mexican leader who says they don't want the border secure and they don't want a wall, they're getting money from the drug cartels.
Well, I mean, listen. If 90% of our heroin is coming across that border, now we have fentanyl on top of it. Then you got human sex trafficking of young girls, teenage girls. Then we've got cartels, gang members, 4,000 homicides in 2 years, 30,000 violent sexual assaults in 2 years, and 100,000 violent assaults in 2 years. I would say that this is now a national security issue. Andy.
Yes.
Yeah, Sean, you're exactly right. This is a national security issue. It's a humanitarian crisis. You got the opioid epidemic. This is a crisis that people have their head in the sand on, if you're on the other side. And the reason that the Democrats don't want to do anything is because they hate this president so badly, they don't want him to have any victories. But they are placing their hatred of Donald Trump over national security, and that we can't allow that to stand. We have got to take action. And so the president's saying, okay, Congress won't help me. This is a national security issue. We're going to take action. And what else would they expect them to do?
Well, I don't know what the alternative is. What is? Give me another alternative except build the wall as fast as you possibly can. Louis.
Well, I think that's step number one. And the next step that I would encourage and have been is put immigration judges in tents or use the old Hurricane Katrina RVs, but get them on the border, get the immigration judges on the border. When somebody claims asylum, they don't get 4 years to come in for their hearing. They get it that day, right then, walk them in, and by the end of the hearing, you know whether they got to go back again. I think that will help stem the tide of what's coming in.
Do you think this overreach impacts 2020 in this sense? I would think if Republicans are smart and they nominate people that support the president's agenda, that Republicans could easily win back the House, maintain their Senate and build in the Senate lead and much more. Louis.
I agree with you completely. And that's exactly who we've got to have as our nominees, people that will support the president. I think we win it back. But let me also thank you. You know, it's been over a year ago. I was going, Sean, I was trying to do an op-ed on Mueller, let people know how bad he is, and they don't want more than 800 words. I've got 2,000 already. You said, Louis, just write everything you want to write, and then we'll put it up on my website. You've still got it there. It's a long dissertation on just how bad Mueller is, and I guarantee you he would not have backtracked like he did if Barr had not reminded him, look, I've got witnesses. You said three times that you didn't bring up indictment, and it was not because of the rules. And he realized, uh-oh, I've been caught in a lie. This is not a nice guy. He's not an honorable man. And we have got to keep fighting over him. One other thing, I guarantee you, Nadler and Mueller, I bet you anything, they had a deal. Nadler wanted him to come out, make a statement that Nadler could use to pursue impeachment, and then he wouldn't make him come face me and Jim Jordan back-to-back in our committee.
Love to see that moment. Last word, we have 15 seconds. Andy Biggs.
Yeah, I think the president wins with or without the impeachment effort, but with the impeachment effort, I think we have a great chance to take back the House in those swing districts. Absolutely.
All right, thank you both for being with us. When we come back, wide open telephones, 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. Oh, we got to tell you about Linda's big party and awards. That's coming up. News Roundup, information overload straight ahead.
Coming up next, our final News Roundup and Information Overload Hour.
All right, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour here at the Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. So we got to give a big shout-out, kudos to our wonderful executive producer, Linda, who was awarded out in, Los Angeles?
Los Angeles.
So there is the Gracie Allen Award.
That is correct.
And you were this year's recipient.
I was.
And the crowd was not exactly warm and fuzzy when you started out your speech because it was full of all bunch
okay,
of liberals.
First of all,
true.
Let me just tell you, that crowd, there was not any fuzziness at all. So I walk into the room. The second that I walk into the room, the woman behind me, who is a very famous actress, decides that she's going to bash everything American from the time we sit down. And I had Julie on my right-hand side, the president of our network, and I had my mother on my left-hand side. And I wasn't sure whose hand I needed to hold harder because I knew something was going to happen because she was so nasty. And then when my picture went up on the big screen and they start talking about the Sean Hannity Show.
Yeah, no, Sean Hannity Show didn't help.
Wait. It gets better.
Yeah.
She goes, oh, God, this girl. Oh. People started to boo. And I thought, oh, this is a lovely feeling. Okay. Yeah. Now, this is after 2 hours.
2 hours.
Of me listening to these women get up and man bash. There were so many women that got up and had these amazing documentaries and talked about the hard work they were doing. And then there would be actresses that got up and they would bash men. And I thought, I do not understand why in the effort to pursue the greater good of one group, you know, one gender, one race, one effort, we need to diminish that of another. I am so grateful for all the wonderful men in my life, including my son. So when I got up, I said, wow, thank you for that very warm welcome.
Yeah.
Everybody started to laugh.
I heard that was a good opening line.
And then I said, I will give you guys all a little piece of information. I said the first time that I was treated like an equal in this business we call media was by Sean Hannity. And the whole room just went, and then it was followed by, you know, a round of applause. And I will tell you what started out as a hostile audience then switched to this loving, accepting audience that was kind of like, gosh, she's right. Because I said, I'm like, I'm not here to dictate or deliberate over your political affiliations. I think it's great that we all have different points of view. The diversity of our opinion is what makes this group wonderful. And so when I got off the stage to take you backstage and down the aisle or whatever, and I'm on the side and all these women were coming up to me, I'm a conservative. Don't say anything. I'm a conservative.
I love that. Don't tell anybody, but I really love your show.
I mean, it was hysterical. I couldn't believe it. And I was really, there was another famous actor there whose name escapes me at this moment, but he gave me a standing ovation, which then led into other people giving a standing ovation. And he came up to me later on after the event. And he was just like, it took a lot of courage to do what you did. He goes, it was not a warm room. But I said, you know what? It became a warm room. And people were really kind and receptive. And even if we didn't agree, I've gotten emails from people that were there who I never met before saying, I don't agree with your politics, but I'm so glad that somebody who, you know, we're not all the same, got the same award. So it was really nice. It was really cool. And, you know, it's because of you, Sean, that I have this opportunity. So thank you.
Well, I watched the speech, and I obviously had issues. My plans, I couldn't make it out there. I wanted to.
Oh, you were washing your hair. You had a big night.
No, yeah, all right. You know how busy I've been. So the other thing is, so what I did behind the scenes, I said, well, we'll go spend a couple of days.
Oh, God, why?
No, because the audience needs to know the backstory. So Linda is obsessed. She thinks we can't survive a second without her. And so we arranged for her and her beautiful, wonderful 3-year-old son, Liam, and their family, and even including mom and her friends, to go to spend a couple of days in San Diego. That was supposed to be for fun. But Linda doesn't like the fact that, oh, there's a show going on and we have an entire team that is capable, willing, able to step up in those moments and double down and do great work. And we put the show on. And
you let me know when you're ready for the supplemental truth that I'll insert into this story.
Now, it was a little bit complicated because Ethan, as everybody else knows too, his wife was about to give birth. But we had, and I'm not going to explain the plan, we had an emergency escape plan for Ethan.
Yeah, that was written in Hollywood scripts that made absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Ethan, was it a great plan or not? How great?
First of all, Ethan's going to say it's a great plan.
How great on a scale of 1 to 10, Ethan, was it?
When I told my family your idea, they said this has got to be a joke because they thought it was so great. But it was a very generous offer.
Was it a great plan that would have...
No, the great plan would have been to stay to the original plan, which was our plan, our mutual agreed upon plan.
I know you have your Gracie Allen Award, but this is still a Hannity show. Now, when
the Hannity show that's run by the Gracie Award winner, Linda McLaughlin.
So here's the question. And would the plan have sufficed to get you where you needed to go and on time?
Yes, it would have.
Thank you very much. Was the plan like super crazy, off the hook, out of the box, amazing?
Yes.
It was.
No.
Excuse me. We're not talking to you. Jason.
I'm sure you're not.
All right. Let's bring Jason in. Jason, how cool was the plan for Ethan?
The plan sounded good in theory.
It's not a theory. The plan would have worked.
Yes, the plan would have worked. It was very generous of you to do what you were proposing.
Going to do.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, in other words, I'm not going to take Ethan away from the best moment of his life.
We're just going to take him as far away as possible. And then when the moment actually occurs, we'll find a way to get him back there as quickly as possible because he wasn't supposed to be here in the first place.
In 10 minutes.
Because somebody decided to do something that made absolutely
no
sense.
He's the one that decided to come here on his own, and he wanted to be here. Let's go back to the happy place. So you got this award, Gracie Allen, Burns and Gracie.
I think we should talk about how we ended up in the place of having to have a supplemental plan because somebody broke the original plan because somebody decided that when I'm not around, they like to act like they're in control. Meanwhile, unbeknownst to
you. What part of the Sean Hannity show are you not comprehending?
I comprehend that.
Oh, apparently not. All right, so here's the next question. So you got the award. I watched the speech. I thought it was an amazing speech, and you took a hostile crowd and you turned them immediately, and because they wanted to hate you because you work on this show. They wanted to despise you. And they have, I guess, a built-in sort of DNA that Hannity must be a horrible person. But one of the things that I give you a lot of credit for, and frankly, everybody on my team, I don't tell people what to do every day. I'm not coming in here and saying, you do this, you do this, you either you step up to the plate and do your job, or you're not going to survive in this crazy business. And that's the same on television. And the same thing I say to everybody that works there. Do your job.
You fire yourself and you work
your
hardest.
There's no way you can get fired. You can't get fired by me except you fire yourself.
100%. I would agree with that.
And because we will give you all the help, knowledge, assistance. We will spell out specifically what's expected. If you're not up to the level, we'll say it again and again and again. And then you will choose either to do it or not do it.
Yeah, you either rise to the challenge or you leave.
Listen, this is not for everybody because...
No, it's not.
One of the reasons I said the other day that I buy lunch every day, it's smart. You know why I buy lunch?
So that we never leave.
You never leave your desk. Because if you start searching, oh, should I get Chinese food today, pizza today? Maybe I want a sandwich. Maybe I want corned beef.
And sometimes when I get
maybe
out there,
I want some onion soup.
Shoes and get my nails
get
done.
My nails.
I'll just never come back.
Oh, that happens all the time.
Oh,
here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we are very proud of you. We're very well deserved. Linda is not an easy person to give something to. And last night...
I was so shocked.
Last night, we totally surprised her with a...
Oh, forget about it. So, first of all...
I thought you were going to cry last night.
I had good mascara on. I'm not going to do that. So, I will tell you, in all truth, I really had no idea. I got all dressed up for this big, quote-unquote, meeting that we were going to. And I prepped all day for this meeting. And I'm trying to research this person that we're meeting with, and I can't find anything on him.
I came up with great lies.
I think the funniest thing when I look at it in hindsight is I say to you, gosh, I can't find this guy's name anywhere. And you go, oh, it's the traditional Irish spelling. And I'm like, what is the traditional Irish spelling? And you're like, you know, I don't even know it. I got to look it up. Right. I got to find it, Linda. I'm really busy. Just keep Googling. You'll find it. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God. I'm like, I am never going to find this name as long as I live. And they're trying to pronounce it to me. And you're like, yeah, it sounds like this in Gaelic. I'm like, what?
So we go to this one restaurant where, frankly, I go to like three restaurants in my life. I don't like to vary.
You go to like one.
Okay. So, and usually there's a certain part of the restaurant where I sit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, we're sitting in a very different
part. No, wait. You got to start from the beginning. You can't leave out walking through the kitchen in the trash.
Well, yeah, I did
so
that, too.
It's pouring rain all across the country right now, as we all know. And New York City was no exception last night. So Sean and I are heading over to this quote-unquote meeting where I'm trying to Google this Irishman that I can't find anywhere. And that's because he doesn't exist. And so... we get to the side of the restaurant, and then one of the servers sees Sean through the window, and he goes, hey, come here, come here. I'm going to take you through the side entrance, which was great because it was pouring rain, except that the side entrance had six trash bags through the kitchen. And Sean's like, here, Linda, climb over this trash. And I'm like, dude, I'm like in this tight little dress, and I'm trying to climb over the trash.
No, the thing that you forgot some big part.
What?
When I walked in, now remember, I was a dishwasher and a cook. I loved being...
You were?
Okay. I loved being in a kitchen when I was I loved it.
I still love being in the kitchen.
So what I'm seeing is now when I wash dishes in this very busy restaurant, I had to wash it all by hand. Every dish, every fork, every knife, every spoon, every cup, and every pot that the chef would put together. And it was like a stack full of pots. And, you know, you have to move. By the end of the night, I sweat off 20 pounds. And I'm watching... Now they got not only dishwashing machines that does it all for you on this sort of conveyor belt, but the way they do the forks and knives, they go through this whole separate little cleaning process. I'm like, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. Look at this. I didn't have this when I was 12 years old washing dishes. And you're like, really? And you're slipping and sliding.
No, honestly, I was really slipping and sliding on that floor, but they were so nice. That kitchen
they were.
I mean, that's a 3-floor restaurant. They're very, very busy. And they were so, so nice. But yes, we get to the restaurant. And for those of you in the audience, Sean does all of his meetings at this one place. So he has like a set area that he sits in, a set table, set section. So they bring us up to the front and they sit us in like this other area where Sean's super recognized. Everybody is looking at him. I'm thinking, this doesn't make any sense. Why are we sitting here? Well, the waiter proceeds to go upstairs to our surprise party and tell everybody, oh, yeah, she's here. She rolled her eyes at me and gave me a dirty look when I sat her in the other section.
Well,
I was like, no, I didn't.
I like to be a private person. So I usually I want to be in the corner in the upstairs part where, you know, if it's business or maybe a birthday or some celebration we're having. And then both the radio and TV staffs came. And then all of a sudden, Linda looks up and sees one. Why is so-and-so here? I'm like, wow, I didn't know they were coming. And
yeah, no, I looked up and I saw her and I was like, oh, she must have a meeting here too. And I was like, oh, she doesn't see us. All right, whatever. And I just kept it moving. I didn't think anything of it because it's right across the street from all of our offices. So I thought, all right, that's not a big deal. And then, like, you know, then they're like, oh, sorry, Mr. Handy, we do have your table ready. And I was like, well, that's annoying. I'm like, they just sat us down. It's like I have snacks, appetizers, a drink. I got to move all this. Really?
This was a very special award, though. This is a big deal. And the fact that you got nominated, the fact that you won, You didn't want to go to receive it because you'd be away from the show. I insisted you go. I'm glad I did. And your family got to see this great moment in your life.
It truly, I mean, thank you for letting us, me go. And then, I appreciate it.
And then all of us got to kind of surprise you, which is not easy to do. You're a pain in the neck and you're nosy buddy. And you get every bit of information out of everybody.
I love you too.
And the fact that we were able to hide it from you is frankly a pretty cool accomplishment in this life, right?
I mean, listen, no one surprises me. I was just saying that the other day. So, yeah,
boom.
You guys got me really good last night. I was very annoyed that I did so much research on a person who doesn't exist, but that's okay. I'll move
you
on.
You kept saying that to me, and I said, don't worry. I know. Just follow my lead in the
my
meeting.
Typical type A. It's like, oh, so what should I say? I can't do this show without an awesome team, and I really do. I mean,
I can't do my show without an awesome team.
I can't.
Yeah. Okay.
I can't. So, I have an awesome team.
This is one of the little things that I would say annoys me about Linda, and that is that, you know, occasionally somebody messes up, and they'll mess up like really bad, and I'll say, all right, who did it? And she's like, no, it's I did it. And I'm like, no, you didn't. That's not your job. That's not what you do. It's not even near your department. You would have nothing to do with it. Who did it? No, it's me. Oh, no, I promise, it's me. And she's lying. That's lying. But you occasionally lie. Just admit
it. I would say lying is an extreme word. I would not use that word. I don't work for the Mueller team.
All right, we're going to have to take a break here. Quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue. It's the Sean Hannity Show. All right, as we continue our final hour free-for-all, John Rich, by the way, at the bottom of the hour. Don't forget our ensemble show on Hannity tonight, Exposing the Deep State. And that means every single solitary person that has been part of our team exposing the biggest abuse of power and corruption scandal in history. That's right. They'll all be in studio. That's all happening tonight at 9 on Hannity on Fox News. Joining us now is, yes, the man, Big and Rich's John Rich is with us. Now, this is an unbelievable story. So he and Greg Gutfeld write this new song. It's called Shut Up About Politics. They're donating all the proceeds to the Folds of Honor, which, by the way, is an awesome charity. We'll put it up on Hannity.com. And it's now currently number one in the world, the number one song in the world. John Rich is with us. How are you, my friend?
Brother Sean, I'm doing great, man. You're right. It is an unbelievable outpouring of support for this crazy little song that me and Greg wrote. We thought, well, you know, we'll maybe we'll raise some money for Folds of Honor. Next thing you know, yes, it's number one on iTunes and Apple Music and everywhere that you get your music.
Unbelievable. I tell you what, why don't we play a little bit of it? I think this is the version you did live. Am I right? Is this the live version that he did? No? Okay. This is the recorded version. All right, let's play that.
It ain't nothing but a big pile of dirty tricks. I'm tired of all the facts. about politics.
I got to tell you, that's such a fun song. The problem is I make my living talking about politics. And if anybody knows John Rich and Redneck Riviera Whiskey, you can't hang out with John Rich and not talk about politics.
Well, you know, it's kind of every now and then, Sean, even you, even me, it's fun to not talk about it.
Why do you think I like going to your concert so much? Why do you think I like music so much? Yeah, of course, it's an escape.
Exactly. Sometimes you just got to go, man, let's just shut up about politics and have some fun, drink a little Redneck Riviera whiskey, whatever. But, you know, it's a fun song, as you just heard. By the way, thanks for playing it. That's the first time I've ever heard it.
Wow.
Play it on the radio. This thing is brand new. I mean, we did it. I recorded it like 3 weeks ago. And what happened is, and I'm hoping we continue this with your audience, people are downloading this thing so fast that, I mean, it is, when you say it's the number one most downloaded song in the world today, think about that. I mean, of all artists, not just country, it's number one. And all of that money is piling up that's going to go to the Folds of Honor. It's going to be an incredible, incredible situation.
Well, Folds of Honor is a great group. I know many people at Fox have worked with them. We work with them in homes, Building Homes for Heroes, Major Dan. I mean, there's so many great charities, and the American people, God bless them, because they step up and they give, you know, as much as they can. We don't the average American that makes this country great, that works hard every day, takes care of their kids, pays their taxes, obeys the laws. They love our military. And like on Memorial Day, we know that we get to barbecue, have freedom and fun and play music and go to concerts because so many have sacrificed.
That's exactly right. It's why the American dream is still alive. It's why you get to be on the radio. It's why I get to sing country music and be an entrepreneur. It's why we have anything great that we have is because of those men and women. You know, and it's a 99-cent download, Sean. It's not even a dollar. It's 99 cents. So, you know, it's not like you're saying, hey, make a donation of a dollar. You get a cool song, too, by the way. You can blast it in your radio and tell your friends about it. So it's a win-win.
Well, it is. You know, isn't it amazing how, you know, I grew up in the LP era and I had a record player and then it was an 8-track recording, then a cassette recording, then a CD. And you usually used to have to get the whole album. Now you download the song. I mean, the whole business model has shifted and changed, and in many ways not really good for artists, because guys like yourself, I mean, there were people that would, you know, bootleg a copy of a song you just produced and give it away for free.
Well, that's true. And then the flip side of it is what's happening with Shut Up About Politics. You can stick it out there and the whole world has access to it. You don't have to ship the records out and get them into the stores. It's just there. If you've got a phone or a computer, which everybody does, you can look up Shut Up About Politics, hit one button, and boom, you've got a new song and you just donate it to Folds of Honor. So, you know, you're right. It's a double-edged sword, but, you know, I look for every opportunity I can to give back to Folds of Honor and other charities, too. But I'm really dialed in with those guys. If you're a kid who lost a parent in combat, they help subsidize the college education for those kids. I know you've talked a lot about Redneck Riviera Whiskey, which is my whiskey all around the U.S., which, by the way, Sean, is now nationwide in Walmart. That just happened last month. And we give 10% of every bottle that we sell back to the Folds of Honor. So this is a continual thing for me, and I know it is for you too.
Well, it's a big deal. And you know what? The fact that, you know, you were able to do this and you're doing this for Folds of Honor, and I know how much you love the military. You're a great guy. Listen, John Rich, we love you. We're going to put up a link so people can buy it on Hannity.com. It's only 99 cents. Every penny goes to Folds of Honor. And a lot of kudos to you and Greg, but you got to stop telling people to shut up about politics. That's my that's my livelihood. All right,
okay,
my friend.
Okay, Sean.
Talk
everybody
soon.
But you.
All right, my friend. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, brother.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. All right, so we have had an ensemble cast that has, we've taken our own road this entire time. Not part of the conspiracy theories, the hoax, the lies, anonymous sources, but no, we've gotten it right. That full ensemble team, audience show tonight on Hannity, John Solomon, Joe DeGeneva, Victoria Tunsing, Greg Jarrett, Tom Fitton, Matt Schlapp, Doug Schoen, Carter Page. Have a great weekend. We'll see you tonight back here on Monday.